Turn to the book of Ezra, the fourth chapter. And does anybody remember what's the book of Ezra about? At least the first three, four chapters that we looked at last week. What's going on in Ezra? A group of the Jews have come back to Jerusalem and begun to do what? Begin to rebuild the temple. And they came back under the leadership of who? Who led that first group back? Zerubbabel came back, and the high priest's name was Joshua. And I mention those two names because they show up again in Zechariah and in Haggai. And so Haggai and Zechariah are contemporary with the first four chapters of the book of Ezra. Anybody know who wrote the book of Ezra? It was written by Ezra. In my opinion, Ezra also wrote 1st and 2nd Chronicles, and I would argue that he wrote 1st and 2nd Chronicles as kind of a lead up to some of the things that are being written and dealt with in the book of Ezra. And what we come to this morning is we start running into some challenges in Ezra, as there's aspects of the book of Ezra that are quite difficult to make sense of. The history, especially the first several chapters, is pretty clear. But then we hit chapter 4, and it starts getting, well, hard. It really is. So let's read verse 1 of chapter 4, and then we'll kind of work through some of the issues that show up here. It says, "Now when the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin heard that the descendants of the captivity were building the temple of the Lord God of Israel, they came to Zerubbabel and the heads of the fathers' houses and said to them," and I'll stop there for a second, who are these adversaries of the children of Judah and Benjamin? So after Israel, the northern tribes were taken captive, Assyria brought a bunch of other peoples into the land. And they became the inhabitants of that northern region of, I'll call it Palestine. It certainly wasn't called Palestine back then, but that northern region of Palestine was inhabited by these people who were mostly from other nations, and they were worshiping their gods as well as the gods, as well as the God of the Bible, but according to the way that the Israelites worshipped him after Jeroboam. So they worshipped God as the two calves. They had a very pagan manner in which they worshipped Jehovah. And so their worship of God was not acceptable, even though they were worshipping God. And so those are the ones that it says are the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin. They come to Zerubbabel and said, "Let us build with you, for we seek your God as you do. And we have sacrificed to him since the days of Esarhaddon, king of Assyria, who brought us here. But Zerubbabel and Joshua and the rest of the heads of the fathers' houses of Israel said to them, 'You may do nothing with us to build a house for our God, but we alone will build to the Lord God of Israel, as King Cyrus, the king of Persia, has commanded us.' Then the people of the land tried to discourage the people of Judah." So because Zerubbabel and the others said, "No, you cannot join us in this," then the displaced peoples from the northern regions began to oppose the building of the temple. And they sent, it says they hired counselors against them. So basically they got their attorneys and they filed an injunction to stop the construction. And they sent these counselors to Cyrus, and they stopped it until the reign of Darius, king of Persia. And that length of time is somewhere around 18 to 20 years from the time the people of Judah were forced to stop building until they were able to finish the building of the temple was somewhere close to 20 years. And verse 6 is where we run into chronology. Now, I am sure that everybody has a nice, clear mental list of all the kings of Babylon, Persia, and Greece, right? You've had about 300 years. So, because you have that mental list, you read the name Ahasuerus, and you say, wait a second, Ahasuerus descended from Darius. So we go from Cyrus to Darius, to Darius's descendant, to Artaxerxes, who is even later than Ahasuerus. He's Ahasuerus' son. And then if we keep going, chapter 5, they begin to return to the building of the temple. Chapter 6, Darius issues a decree. And at the end of chapter 6, in the reign of Darius, you have the temple completed. So chapter 4, we go from Cyrus to Darius to nearly 100 years later, I believe it's like 60 years later, Artaxerxes. And then chapter 5, we're talking about Darius again. And what makes this complex? It says in verse 23 of chapter 4, "Now when the copy of King Artaxerxes' letter was read before Rehum, Shimshai the scribe, and their companions, they went up in haste to Jerusalem against the Jews, and by force of arms made them cease." And so you have, now during the reign of Artaxerxes, you have them being forced to cease the work that they are doing. Verse 24, "Thus the work of the house of God which is at Jerusalem ceased, and it was discontinued until the second year of the reign of Darius, king of Persia." And I know I skipped some verses in here, but if you're reading what's going on, you have Cyrus, Darius, Ahasuerus, Artaxerxes, and a lot about Artaxerxes, and you have here at the end of that, this decree from Artaxerxes that ends up with them going and forcibly causing the Jews to stop work. And then you have the work is discontinued until the second year of Darius again. And historians read this and say, well, wait a second, that doesn't work because Darius was before Artaxerxes. There's not, as far as we know, there's not a Darius that would fit all the rest of these particulars after Artaxerxes. So it ends up being just frankly confusing and trying to make sense of why does Ezra go from Darius to Artaxerxes and then bring Darius back up again? Anybody have any wild speculations about what may be going on? There are two answers, and the reason I bring this up is not just to make things difficult on us this morning, but a couple major reasons to bring it up. One, it's a very obscure objection, but it is, and sometimes people want to object to the accuracy of the Bible and say the Bible's not trustworthy. Some will point to this section here in Ezra chapter 4, and so hopefully we'll have some answer to give them. But more importantly this morning is the answer we give, the reason why all of this is important is it directly relates to the reason Ezra wrote Ezra. One of the responses to this is that Ahasuerus and Artaxerxes are not actually the Ahasuerus and Artaxerxes that are famous in history. There are two men. In fact, Ahasuerus we know better as Xerxes, and he was incredibly famous because of his wars with the Greeks. If you've heard anything about the battle at Thermopylae, the stand of the Spartan army, it would have been against Xerxes. And then his son Artaxerxes, we're going to see in the book of Nehemiah, but they're both fairly well-known historical kings. And so one answer to the problems presented in Ezra 4 is that Ahasuerus and Artaxerxes are not actually proper names, but they're titles, and they are given to Cyrus's descendants, would have been the Ahasuerus and Artaxerxes. And so it would have been Cyrus, this guy Ahasuerus, this guy Artaxerxes, that's not the ones you think they are, and then Darius. And so all of this would have taken place before the second year of the reign of Darius. I disagree with that. There's a few problems that are evident there, and I won't bore you with all the details except to say the chronology really doesn't work. And so that we have later in Ezra, we have some clear evidences that there's multiple generations preceding the reign of Artaxerxes. And so that we can't say all of this happened between Cyrus and Darius. The biblical timeline doesn't permit us to. And there's also the historical evidence for saying that these other two guys are Ahasuerus and Artaxerxes just isn't really there. It's really a very weak argument. What I think is happening in Ezra chapter 4 is Ezra, because Ezra is writing this from the reign of Artaxerxes. Ezra was not contemporary with Zerubbabel and Joshua. Ezra wasn't there when they started building the temple. Ezra was later. And so he is writing this after the fact. And so he now brings in events that are going to happen later to help accomplish his purposes for the writing of the book of Ezra. Part of what Ezra is doing is encouraging the people in the rebuilding of Jerusalem, because Ezra and Nehemiah are contemporary. Nehemiah is the one who went back really to restore the walls of Jerusalem. Ezra had been there before Nehemiah showed up and then while Nehemiah was present. And so Ezra is writing in part to encourage the people of Israel in the restoration of the city of Jerusalem. And most importantly, he is writing to encourage them and to challenge them in the restoration of the proper worship of God. As I said last week, Ezra is all about worship. That is his concern. And so in this history, he jumps forward in time to show how God is working, or to show some of the challenges in front of them, so that he can then go back to give evidence God has worked before. This is not the first time that Israel has been in a challenging situation where the officials of the empire that rule over them were trying to prevent them from rebuilding. And he is showing them that God intervened before, and he will do so again. And so let me read very quickly verse 6. So we have, in the reign of Ahasuerus, in the beginning of his reign, they wrote an accusation against the inhabitants of Judah and Jerusalem. Now, who would the they be? The adversaries. Verse 1. Now, when the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin, that's one reason I think that Ezra is vague on the adversaries, is he's not really so much concerned about the specific individuals. But this group of individuals, a classification of people who are adversaries against the Jews. And so verse 6, you have adversaries. Not the same adversaries necessarily, but the same kind of adversaries. And it says, in the days of Artaxerxes also, Bishlam, Mithridath, Tabal, and the rest of their companions wrote to Artaxerxes, king of Persia, and the letter was written in Aramaic script and translated into the Aramaic language. Rehum, the commander, and Shimshai, the scribe, wrote a letter against Jerusalem to King Artaxerxes in this fashion. And now Ezra is mentioning their names because the people who would have first read the book of Ezra would have probably known these people. Now he's talking about things that were contemporary with Ezra and the people of Jerusalem who Ezra is addressing. And so it says, verse 9, from Rehum the commander, Shimshai the scribe, and the rest of their companions, I'm going to skip all the ites and the so forth there. It says, verse 12, this is to Artaxerxes, let it be known to the king that the Jews who came up from you have come to us at Jerusalem and are building the rebellious and evil city and are finishing its walls and repairing the foundations. Now, do you think that characterizing Jerusalem as a rebellious and evil city is a just characterization? I would say they are using this as political rhetoric. They are characterizing it, Jerusalem, in this way, and yet they do have history on their side. If you remember the end of the kingdom of Judah, they were under the control of various kingdoms, starting with Egypt and then Babylon, and they've rebelled multiple times against their rulers. And so it's intended to be malicious and prejudicial, but it's not without evidence. And so they go on and say, let it now be known that to the king that if this city is built and the walls completed, they will not pay tax, tribute, or custom, and the king's treasury will be diminished. They certainly knew what to target when addressing the king. If they do this, you're not going to get all the money that you should be getting. And so because we want to make sure the king's treasuries are full, you should stop them from building. It says, now because, verse 14, now because we received support from the palace, it was not proper for us to see the king's dishonor. Therefore, we have sent and informed the king that search may be made in the book of the records of your fathers, and you will find in the book of the records, and know that this city is a rebellious city, harmful to kings and provinces, and that they have incited sedition within the city in former times, for which cause this city was destroyed. So they're hearkening back to the days of Babylon and saying, just look into history again. And you'll see that Jerusalem was destroyed because they were rebellious. They didn't just submit to their rulers. They rebelled against them. And so that goes on and says, we inform the king that if the city is rebuilt and its walls are completed, the result will be that you will have no dominion beyond the river. And now they ramp it up. And the beyond the river is possibly the River Jordan, possibly the River Euphrates. It depends on how you read it. But regardless, they are saying, if you let Jerusalem be rebuilt, they're going to take over this whole territory. And you're going to lose a portion of your kingdom. And because we're jealous for your honor and your glory, we want to see you lifted up and magnified. We thought we should tell you what these terrible Jews are doing so that you can stop them. And of course, there's a lot there that I think we're rightly suspicious of in their overly flowery and, I'll say, sympathetic brown-nosing language that they are employing there. And so it says, keep going here, verse 17, the king, that is Artaxerxes, sent an answer to Rehum the commander, Shimshai the scribe, blah, blah, blah. The verse 18, the letter which you sent to us has been clearly read before me. And I gave the command, and the search has been made, and it was found that this city in former times has revolted against kings, and rebellion and sedition have been fostered in it. There have also been mighty kings over Jerusalem who have ruled over all the region beyond the river. A tax, tribute, and custom were paid to them. Now give the command to make these men cease, that this city may not be built until the command is given to me. Take heed now that you do not fail to do this. Why should damage increase to the hurt of the kings? Now when the copy of King Artaxerxes' letter was read before Rehum, Shimshai the scribe and their companions, they went up in haste to Jerusalem against the Jews and by force of arms made them cease. And right there brings it up, I think, to probably or very close to where Ezra was at the time he was writing Ezra. That they maybe had started rebuilding without official sanction and been forced to cease. They had to stop. And that's where Ezra is. That's where the people who are reading this book were at. They were in Jerusalem. It's still in ruins around them. They had started rebuilding and now they can't. Verse 24, he jumps back to verse 5. And so all of that from verse 6 to 23 is basically a historical overview that brought the readers of Ezra up to their day and showing them this is the problem. Don't forget, this is the problem. And now let's go back and let's see how God dealt with a similar problem. And one of the ways we would say that the whole thing with Artaxerxes is not talking about the rebuilding of the temple is because the letter there, they're very clearly talking about rebuilding the city. Now, it's certainly possible that these adversaries against the Jews were exaggerating the nature of the problem. Some have said, well, they were talking about the temple, they just exaggerated it to say the whole city. I don't think that's the case. I think it's really very simple. They were writing later talking about the rebuilding of the city of Jerusalem. And then Ezra goes back in the history here to talk about the rebuilding of the temple that was stopped until the second year of the reign of Darius. Does that make sense? Kind of following what's going on there? So you get to chapter 5, it says, then the prophet Haggai and Zechariah, the son of Iddo, prophets, prophesied to the Jews who were in Judah and Jerusalem, in the name of the God of Israel who was over them. So Zerubbabel the son of Shealtiel and Joshua the son of Jozadak rose up and began to build the house of God, which is in Jerusalem, and the prophets of God were with them, helping them. And so what you have, again, is about 18 years or so from Ezra chapter 4, verse 5, where they stopped and frustrated their purposes, to chapter 5, verse 2, when they begin to rebuild again. And Haggai chapter 2 is where Haggai really prophesies and calls them to rebuild the temple regardless of the decrees of the kings of Persia. And so they obey. They begin to build the house of God. Verse 3, it says, at the same time, Tattenai, the governor of the region beyond the river, and Shethar-Boznai and their companions came to them and spoke to them, who has commanded you to build this temple and finish this wall? It says, and accordingly, we told them the names of the men who were constructing this building, but the eye of their God was upon the elders of the Jews so that they could not make them cease till a report could go to Darius. And he goes on and quotes the letters. And this is one of the strong evidences that Ezra wrote this, because Ezra was a scribe of Persia, as well as a scribe of the law. He had access to all these official documents. And so he's, of course, very careful in quoting these things. And verse 17, the letter ends, Ezra 5, verse 17, it says, "Now therefore, if it seems good to the king, let a search be made in the king's treasure house, which is there in Babylon, whether it is so that a decree was sent by King Cyrus to build this house of God at Jerusalem, and let the king send us his pleasure concerning this matter." Then King Darius issued a decree, and a search was made in the archives where the treasures were stored in Babylon and in Ecbatana and the palace that is in the province of Media. A scroll was found, and in it was a record written thus. And then it goes on, and it is the decree of King Cyrus, written in the first year of his reign, issuing this decree that they could rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. And so Darius sends back, and it tells them, verse 8, "Moreover, I issue a decree as to what you shall do for the elders of these Jews for the building of this house of God. Let the cost be paid at this king's expense from the taxes on the region beyond the river. This is to be given immediately to these men so that they are not hindered. And whatever they need, young bulls, rams, and lambs for the burnt offerings of the God of heaven, wheat, salt, wine, and oil, according to the request of the priests who are in Jerusalem, let it be given them day by day without fail, that they may offer sacrifices of sweet aroma to the God of heaven and pray for the life of the king and his sons. Also, I issue a decree that whoever alters this edict, let a timber be pulled from his house and erected, and let him be hanged on it, and let his house be made a refuse heap because of this, and may the God who causes his name to dwell there destroy any king or people who put their hand to alter it or to destroy this house of God which is in Jerusalem. I, Darius, issue a decree, let it be done diligently." So Darius writes back and says, yes, Cyrus decreed it to be built, build it. And if you hinder it, we are going to tear down your house and we are going to use the leftover wood to make a gallows. Well, actually, it's an impaling pole on which a person would be impaled. So very insistent. Do not hinder the work of rebuilding the temple. And so they go back and with the message to the people in the region around Jerusalem. And so verse 14, the elders of the Jews built and they prospered through the prophesying Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the son of Iddo. And they built and finished it according to the commandment of the God of Israel and according to the command of Cyrus, Darius, and Artaxerxes, king of Persia. Ezra goes and messes us up again. Because now we find, Ezra says, the decree of Cyrus, Darius, and Artaxerxes. Oh, wait a second. Artaxerxes, we've already talked about, wasn't then. Artaxerxes had nothing to do with the decree of building the temple. But what Ezra is doing, as he did in chapter 4, is bringing this in to their problem right then. He is bringing Artaxerxes into this equation to remind them that the problem they're facing right then in Jerusalem wasn't that different from the problem that they were facing before when they built the temple. And so he's tying these things together, not suggesting or saying that Artaxerxes was involved directly in the decrees to rebuild the temple, but that he was involved in the decrees to rebuild Jerusalem.